Today we're going to be talking about leading like Jesus. Another title could be gospel influence. Gospel influence. Now, we're all on a different spot in our journey. I hope you know that. Everyone in here is on a spiritual journey, whether you know that or not. I was getting waylaid this week on Instagram by a guy who is an atheist, and I just posted a video about God, and he was like, beep, 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 you're stupid, beep, I hate you, bleep, I'm my own God, and he was just grilling me, and I was just responding like, hey, man, you do you, sorry about that, buddy, hey, I love you, all right. You know, I was trying not to get drug into that ugly cat fight, and I finally had to take it off when it got a lot of expletives on it, but the point is, he's on a journey, he's following himself. Everyone here, you're following something. Something is on the throne of your heart. Something has the reins of your life. And for many here, we would say it's Jesus, and we're following Jesus. And I'm here today to tell you that I believe with all my heart that Jesus is the only one who's truly worthy of following. And I can say that for many reasons, and of course, if you're here, you expect me to say that as the pastor, but I'm being sincere here. I would say, you could say it for many reasons, love. Let's look at this one. Jesus is absolutely worth following because he showed more love than anyone ever in the history of love. He stripped off his godhood and left the cosmos, and he walked down to earth and put on flesh to come live in the mud with us and live perfectly so he could die on a cross and redeem us. No greater love has anyone than to lay down his life for his friend. He gave everything he had. He healed, he loved, he forgave. That's the hardest one. We can say about his authenticity. His authenticity. There is no one more authentic than Jesus Christ, ever. Jesus did exactly what he said he was going to do. He was exactly who he said he was. And it is a historical record that he was a real man, that he walked the earth. There are secular historians outside of the faith, outside of the Bible, who record this Jesus of Nazareth. And if you dig into it, you'll find that anyone who tries to discredit him, that let's say they call him a liar. Well, no one that I know would go to the cross and die for something they know is a lie. Well, maybe he's a lunatic. Well, you can't call him a lunatic because all of his teaching was exactly perfectly harmonized. He never was like, I'm a poached egg. You know, he never just like went off the hook. He always was the same, no matter who was watching. He always had this authority and this influence that when he spoke, people went like this. Who is this man that teaches with such authority? I mean, he was blowing the minds of the church leaders when he was 12 in the temple asking questions. He had all authority and influence. He's worthy to be. And maybe you're a businessman. I'm going to throw this one for free. Maybe if you're a businessman, think about this. Jesus built his brand in 3 years, has thousands of franchises all over the world, and they've lasted over 2,000 years. No business has ever done that. And in Matthew 28, Jesus says something really cool. He says, all authority has been given to me, and now I'm giving it to you. He says, go and make disciples. The Great Commission, Matthew 28. He says, go and make disciples. Go and influence in my name. Influence. I had to learn in my life that I'm influencing all the time. That's a hard pill to swallow. I don't know if you've ever thought about it. It's easy. I knew I was influenced when I go have lunch with somebody and I'm influencing them, or they're asking me to counsel them, or they're inviting my influence. Like, that's easy. But I wasn't ready for all the times I'm influencing when I'm not meaning to influence, Robin. So I'm going to be real with you. I'm going to lead with some weakness here and just say, here's the greatest example I could think of this week. My daughter, Aylin, she comes up to me and hits me. Not really hits me, but verbally hits me. She says, Dad, why do you tell me I'm not allowed to watch videos on YouTube with bad words, but you watch movies with bad words? You're grounded. No, I didn't say that. And I'm not going to answer that because that's a whole nother sermon. But I'm telling you, I'm influencing her, even when I don't think I'm influencing her, when I don't realize it. Influence, we all have influence. You are influencing people. Someone is drinking from your life. Think of your life as a water source. Someone is drinking from it constantly. Maybe it's your kids over dinner. Maybe it's how you respond to your spouse in a fight. Maybe it's around the water cooler at work. Maybe it's on the ball team. Maybe it's at the church. Maybe it's on the golf course. Maybe it's at the lunch table in the cafeteria, wherever. People are drinking from your life, and they're learning, and they're thinking, and they're forming opinions, impressions. Influence is a fact. So the question is today, how are you influencing? Is it for the good or for the bad? Are you leading people towards Jesus or away from Jesus? When people drink from your life, are they drinking from a babbling brook or a stagnant pond? That's what we're going to look at today. Jesus says a lot about this. We're going to look at Mark chapter 10. We have it on the screen if you don't have your Bibles. Mark chapter 10. I love this account. I'm just going to walk through here so you can read along with me. Jesus, he's walking with his disciples. Check this out in verse 32. He says, they were now on the way up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them, and the disciples were filled with awe, and the people following behind were overwhelmed with fear. Now, this is because Jesus had been doing some crazy miracles, and he'd been saying some crazy stuff to their mind. He just now finished saying that it's really hard for rich people to go to heaven because they love money so much. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And so people are just like, whoa, who is this man? We just don't know how to handle this. And it says, Jesus, once again, began to describe, he took the 12 disciples aside and he began to describe everything that was about to happen to him. Now catch this. He says, listen, he said, we're going up to Jerusalem where the Son of Man, that's him, will be betrayed to the leading priest and the teachers of religious law. They will sentence him to die and hand him over to the Romans. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him with a whip, and kill him. But after 3 days, he will rise again. And so he's like lowering the mood, all right? So, you know, they're going along. They're doing what they do every day. Disciples are going around doing their miracles and stuff with Jesus. And all of a sudden, he pulls them aside and says, listen, guys, I need to tell y'all something. Y'all need to realize it's almost here. We're walking to Jerusalem. This is our final hoorah, all right? It's about to go down, and I need you to understand it's going to be all right. And so how would they respond? Let's see how they respond. Catch this. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. Said, teacher, they said, we want you to do us a favor. What's your request? He asked. They replied, when you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in the places of honor next to you, one on your right and the other on your left. Does this not sound like a conversation with your kids, parents? Like you're pouring your heart out, and then they just go squirrel right in the middle. Like Jesus is pouring his heart out, and they're like, hey, will you do us a favor? It reminds me of when Isai, I remember there was a time when I was talking to Isai, and I was like apologizing because I lost my temper and I blew up on him. And I was like, man, I just want you to know, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have lost my cool. You know, I apologize for that. And he was like, all right, hey, can we go out for lunch? And I was like, I'm trying to, like, get a point across here. Can we just, you know, connect here for a second? And so they do that to Jesus. Jesus is, like, trying to, like, heart to heart and, like, hey, by the way. And this shows they had no idea. They didn't get it yet. They were still in the Jewish mindset. They still believed at this point, the disciples believed that Jesus' kingdom, the Messiah's kingdom, was going to be physical, military, political. He's going to rain down the wrath of God. Angels are going to show up and we're going to smite all these Romans and we're going to burn them on the cross as they've been burning our people with. Woo! That's what they thought. That's what they believed. That's what they held to. And Jesus keeps trying to tell them, that's not the kind of kingdom I'm bringing. It's a spiritual kingdom. But they still don't get it. And if you notice, what was their concern? Their concern wasn't what was happening to Jesus. It was what happens to them. Oh, by the way, Jesus, can we be your right-hand men when we're in power, you know? They wanted to be special, to have this power. And check this out. And Jesus said to them, when they asked, he says, you don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering that I'm about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering that I must be baptized with? He's like, bro, you don't even know what y'all are asking. Like, I know where I'm going. And people who follow me, this is where they're going. He's like, are you able to handle that? And look how they answer. Really flip it. I love this. They're like, Oh, yeah. Psst. Yeah, we're able. That reminds me, have you ever done something like that? Has anyone asked you a question and you're like, yeah, and you had no idea what you're really talking about? Anybody? It reminds me of two 18-year-olds getting married, and they think they know what they're getting into. And you're just like, just wait. Call me as soon as you start fighting a lot. I'll teach you how to fight with your gloves up. You know, you think you know, but you have no idea. That's what Jesus is saying to him. He's saying, you have no idea what you're asking. You have no idea. And then he goes on to say, you will indeed drink from the bitter cup and be baptized with my baptism of suffering. That's prophetic. All of the disciples, 11 out of 12, were killed, martyred for their faith in church history. So he knew they would go, they would end up dying. And he says, you will indeed drink from the bitter cup and be baptized in my baptism of suffering. But I have no right to say who will sit on my right or left. God, the Father, has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen. And verse 41, when the other ten disciples heard this, what James and John were asking, they were indignant. Now, they were angry. Now, I may be wrong, but I don't believe they were angry because of how rude to ask that right now when Jesus is trying to pour his heart out. I think they were angry because they wanted those seats. You know what I'm saying? Because they squabbled. They squabbled a lot about, hey, I want to be here. I want to be there. I want to be the man in charge. And so Jesus does what he always does, and I love this. He pulls them aside, and he's like, boys, come here. Now, when we read this, it says, and Jesus gathered his disciples. I want to research this and find out how many times he had to pull them aside to, like, correct them, like children. You know, I was like, all right, you totally missed the point. All right, guys, come over here again. Come over here again. Like you see that all through the New Testament. All right, guys, come on over here again. And it also encourages me because when I keep doing the same stupid thing over and over, it reminds me he's patient with me. You know what I'm saying? Like he's like, I love y'all, but y'all are dumb sometimes. Come on over here again. And he's saying that to every one of us here today. And it says, check this out. And it says, when the other 10 disciples, they were indignant. So Jesus called them together and said, listen, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people. And officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Some translations say, not so with you. Followers of Jesus, not so with you. Chris, not so with you. Alan, not so with you. Insert your name. It should not be so with you. If we are followers of Jesus, we will lead differently. We will not lord our position, wherever that is. We will not lord it over. And he says, not so with you. He says, whoever wants to be a leader among you, who wants to have influence on people, must become their servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life a ransom for many. This is leadership 101. He says, not so with you. He flips and says, you think you know leadership because this is what you learned at that seminar, because this is what you learned from that book, because this is what you learned on the job. He says, but my followers, everything's different. We are different. He says, my kingdom is different. It's not about power and possessions and money. It never has been and it never will be. It's not about lording your authority over them. It's about serving. And he says that, he says, your influence is for others. Your influence is for others. It's not for you. It's not about you. Everybody say that with me. Say, it's not about me. Let's just be free. All right, let's do it again. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about me. He says, if you want to be like me, then serve others like me. That's literally, why do you think he tagged the last verse on there? He says, because even I, guys, even I, the Messiah, God, the one who came from heaven, if anyone has the right to ask for you to serve him, it's me. And even I came to lower myself and serve. So if you're going to be my follower, do the same. That's gospel influence. And I'm sure they were scratching their heads as they heard this, because it's just so contradictory to everything we know today. They knew back then about leadership. Everybody wants to be the leader because you want to call the shots. Which, by the way, if you want to call the shots, you got to take the shots. That's a freebie. And if you want to make everybody happy, don't be a leader. Sell ice cream. Okay? That's another freebie. But so he's trying to teach them because he knows that these guys are going to go on, they're going to plant churches, and they're going to be influential. And maybe you're thinking right now, maybe you're thinking like, well, that's easy for you to say, Pastor, because you're talking about church world. I want you to know something. This applies in every area of life. You can lead like Jesus, and there have been great leaders who led like Jesus in every vocation, in business, companies, electricians, teachers, plumbers, homeschool moms. This applies, because here's why. Catch this. If you're taking notes, you're going to write this down. You're a follower of Jesus first, and your vocation second. You're a follower first, and your vocation is second. So you're a businessman. No, you're actually a follower of Jesus who happens to be a businessman. So you're a plumber? Well, you're actually a follower of Jesus who happens to be a plumber. You're a teacher? Well, you're actually first a follower of Jesus who happens to be a teacher. And you know what? I even apply this in my own life. You know what? I'm a pastor, but you know what? First, I'm a child of God. And I'm a son of God, and I'm a man of God, and that takes place before my vocation. I just happen to be a teacher of the Bible. And that's taken me a long time to get there because it's hard to untangle that identity when you get it wrapped up in your vocation. You are not your job. Somebody needs to hear that this morning. You are not your job. You are not how much you bring home. Your worth is not defined by that. Okay? You're a follower of Jesus. You're a child of God first. And right after that, so is Jesus anti-leadership? No. Jesus was one of the greatest leader ever. Okay, not one of, the. We learned so much. There's been so many books on leadership written from his life. Now catch this. Here's what he was saying. Here's I think the deepest truth he was getting at is his heart over productivity. So he's not saying don't be productive. He's just saying don't lose your heart, don't lose your soul, don't lose your perspective while you're trying to be productive. I've seen a lot of people lose their families because they're productive, workaholic. Don't lose everything trying to be productive. Don't lose yourself. Don't lose your relationship with God because of productivity. He's saying it's your heart first. We should not lord it over them. There should not be fear in the way we lead. And there's a lot of leaders in here. I was part of an organization once, and there was a lot of fear in it. There was a lot of, I better do what the leader says, or I'm going to be in trouble, I'm going to be grounded. And it's not like unhealthy to know your responsibility, but it became very scary at the level of it. I got out of it. But we shouldn't be domineering. We shouldn't be authoritative or authoritarian over people. We should serve them and lead them. And here I think is the biggest thing. Here's the biggest thing. I want to make sure I connect this. Here it is. As a leader, and again, remember, everyone in here has influence. Everyone in here is a leader somewhere. It could be the discussion at the cafeteria table, middle schoolers. You're the one that sets the tone. It could be anywhere, but catch this. Do you want something from them or for them? How you use your influence, do you use it in a way that you want something from them or for them? Because I think that is the biggest difference between how Jesus leads and how other people lead. Jesus wants what's best for you. For his followers, he wants you to thrive. And as a pastor, I want you to know something. I got into the ministry. I came to, the only reason was because I love God and I love people. It wasn't like I knew I was never going to have a mansion. I knew I was never going to have a Hummer. I knew we're never going to have the biggest church in all East Tennessee, whatever. I know all that, but I simply just came into it because I love people and I love God, and I want people to thrive in God. And so, even though some people, it's hard to, again, I'm human and I make mistakes and sometimes I say stupid stuff that I didn't mean to say, but I want you to know this, I want for you, nothing would thrill me more than to see your marriages thrive and to see your kids grow up to be mighty men and women of God and to see people who have never opened the Bible to start reading it. I got fired up this week. Someone said, hey, I just want you to know that you had a sermon a couple weeks ago, and it hit me, and me and my wife have been getting up early and reading the Bible, and I was like, woo! I said, that gets me fired up, seeing people take steps towards Jesus. So in how you lead and how you use your influence, your gospel influence, are you helping others get ahead? Or is it about getting them to do something for you so you get ahead? There's a word for that in English. It's called manipulation. But not so with you. Not so with you, followers of Jesus. Not so with you. So how are you influencing today? I'm going to give you just two challenges and then we're going to close. This week, I want to challenge you this week to think about it on your job, at the kitchen table, in your conversations with your spouse. Think about, like, how am I influencing? Like, I want you to serve. And when I say serve, maybe you have, I just literally mean, like, put yourself beneath what someone else wants. Normally, we fight for our way. So be like, hey, what would you like to do this evening? Hey, why don't you pick where we eat today? Hey, why don't I help the kids with homework this time? Men. Hey, why don't you let me help you with that? Just serve. And here's the second thing I'm going to say. I'm going to challenge you to serve this week in your influence and your leadership. Use it to serve others for them. Here's the second thing. I want you to pray this week. I want you to catch this. I want you to pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. Now catch this. I don't know if you're like me, but when I think about my prayer life, most of the time I'm praying for my will and I ask God to bless it. And he's been wearing me out over that here lately. He's like, do you really want my will, or do you just want what you want and your agenda and your plans and your will, and you just want me to, like, bless it? So I'm growing in that. He's growing me in that. I'm trying to pray now, Lord, today I want your will. I want you to show me, who do you want me to talk to? Who do you want me to minister to? Who needs a touch today? Who needs an encouraging word today? God, I want your will, and then I want the power to carry that out instead of, God, here's what I want. Now, will you please make it happen? I want to challenge you to pray differently. Pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And let's influence people like Jesus. And we will see him do mighty things in our marriages, with our kids, at our work, and in our community.